content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine. This is in this month of January. We're going to be toggling back and forth between Essence and Ebony Magazine because both of their the magazines were dated for December and January December 2018 and January 2019. So we're going to be going back and forth between the two. So first thing first, let's just do a recap from last week. Last week we went over the cover of Essence magazine, which has Michelle Obama in it, and we got to discover some of, you know, the things that she opened up in reference to her book. And she provided us with some White House confessions, how finding your Barack and living free. And then there was an excerpt from her book. So let's go, continue on with this. We're going to start today with love and life goals. It's time to get busy living your most inspired life. In a world where we are inundated daily with crazy headlines, it is more important than ever that we focus on making our dreams our reality. Here's your guide to clarifying your vision for the coming year, or in our case this year, and manifesting your best season yet. Declare your dreams. First things first, list your intentions and desires. When we set goals that promise rewards, the brain releases dopamine, or dopamine, says John Assaraf, author of Inner Size, the science to unlock your brain's hidden power. Assaraf emphasizes that the very promise of a reward releases dopamine, just as the actual experience does. Dopamine then travels to your frontal lobe, where it gives you the motivation and ability to plan and develop strategies and then to act, he adds. Think of dopamine as the brain fuel in your motivational tank. I learned the importance of setting goals the hard way. I'd never made it an object to meet Oprah Winfrey. So when I was in the same room with her in 2016, it didn't occur to me to make it happen. I was determined to not repeat that mistake. So when I sat down to write goals for the following year, I included these simple words, meet Oprah. Define your why and how. Once you've identified what you want, take a few moments to clarify why it matters and how you will get there. Thinking about why we're doing something activates a different part of the brain from the region that is activated when we think about how to do something, Assaraf explains. By activating both regions of the brain, he says, you shift from the realm of imagination to beliefs, actions, and productive habits. Your why can be connected to the long-term impact of a goal and what it means to your life and others, including our ancestors. For inspiration on your how, I recommend an activity I call the Crazy Eight, in which you list a big dream and eight ways it could come true. My Crazy Eight for meeting Oprah range from randomly bumping into her to being a guest on Super Soul. When I got clear on my why and how to connect with Miss Winfrey, I started working on what I would say. Celebrate small wins. As you make a plan, break actions into a bite-sized task or into bite-sized tasks and celebrate wins along the way. Some parts of your brain are designed to set goals for the future, while others learn to immediate gratification, Assaraf says. So before you release those extra pounds, take a bow for that reorganized kitchen and that gallon of water you drink every day for a week straight. Long-term goals require ongoing motivation, which can be supported by regular dopamine. Infusions, Asaroff says, when you check something off your to-do list, it gives you a piece of satisfaction. Get a dream partner. Experts suggest we are more likely to achieve a goal when someone else knows about it and keeps us accountable. Consider joining a mastermind or Facebook group with like-minded women to help you stay motivated. Don't set limits. After declaring I would meet Oprah in 2017, the universe did me one better. I got an invite to her Wisdom of Sundays brunch at her home last fall. When we give ourselves permission to raise our expectations, we can be wowed by the outcome. Thinking about achieving your goals increases your level of consciousness, Asaroff says. This season, let your focus be on creating a life that curls your toes. Chart your success. Once you have declared your dream destination, it's time to commit. The Sonda Brown Duckett can offer some inspiration. Duckett made history as the first African American to become CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase's Consumer Bank, the country's largest, where she manages a network of more than $684 billion in deposits and investments. At one of her first company town halls, she asked the employees she managed at the organization's 5,000-plus locations a straightforward question. What are you saving for? Each location that created a vision board with words and images representing the personal goals they had committed their cash to achieve. Fund your dreams. Now that you have gotten clear on your desires, get ready to develop a concrete strategy to pay for them. It's less stressful to save when you know your $10 is going toward your dream, Duckett says. In other words, it's easier to say no to a tempting bargain when you are clear on your beach vacation fund for the spring. Invest in a well-balanced life. Think about your life as a diversified portfolio, Duckett recommends. She advises that you include all the things that matter most to you. Spending time with girlfriends, having a successful career, giving back to the community, being a great daughter, traveling, living in your own home, reading, and anything else you enjoy. Then allocate a percentage of your time to each item on your list for a total of 100%. You'll be able to see more clearly when you're out of balance, she suggests, just like a diversified portfolio. There will be ups and downs. Sometimes you're overcommitted at work because you need to be, but then you need to recalibrate. When Duckett realized she wanted to increase the percentage of time she spent with family and friends, she made space in her schedule to write cards to reconnect with loved ones and planned a trip with her college buddies. Be your own umbrella. And as we aim for our bright future, we must also prepare for the unexpected. According to the Pew Charitable Trust, more than half of American families are financially insecure. Nearly half of adults say they cannot cover a $400 expense and would have to borrow money or sell something. Duckett states to strengthen your savings habit, she recommends you start, skip, and stop. Start with your goal and set a budget for achieving it. Skip all unnecessary spending for a week. And stop thinking about saving by automating your payments to an account you can't easily touch. Prioritize what matters. Even with her fast-paced career, Duckett stays focused on the goals that make her heart sing. Being a wife, a daughter, a friend, an executive, and a philanthropist are all in my portfolio, along with some of the things that I just love, like reading, she says. I also always wanted to adopt. Her family welcomed 2-year-old Mackenzie, who joined Duckett's 3 older children. And this year, she saw another dream come true when her family went on a Disney cruise to celebrate her son Miles turning 10. My whole family, including my mom and my dad, who is battling cancer, and my aunt and uncle were able to go, she says. It was on my vision board and what I was saving for. As Duckett knows, we create our vision, one dream and one dime at a time. Continuing on with love and life. Home article. Reclaim your kitchen and your health. It's time to rev up the heartbeat of your home. So here's your soup to nuts recipe for making 2019 your best year yet, with a little help from the busiest room in your house. Number one, take inventory. Start with one area of your kitchen, such as the pantry, the fridge, a cabinet, or the junk drawer, and pull out every spice, snack, box, or utensil. Think of this as a mindfulness activity. Seeing and touching these things bring awareness and makes you more likely to use them, says Jenny Friedman, a Philadelphia-based registered dietitian. This exercise can also shed light on your culinary habits. Are you a freezer meal girl, or do you cook from scratch every night? Do you lack basic cooking utensils? And is that why you order takeout so often? You'll see if you have a system that isn't working for you, and have an opportunity to create one that will, says Friedman. Just make sure to eat a healthy meal before you begin. That way you're less tempted to eat that bag of chips in the pantry, says Louisa Petri, MD, a cardiologist in New York and an owner of 4 weight loss clinics in New York and Connecticut. Number 2, purge and clean. As you review the contents of each area of your kitchen, sort items into 3 piles. Keep, toss, and donate. Get rid of what no longer appeals to you, like those rice noodles you bought last summer for that recipe you never tried, says Friedman. Donate any food you won't eat that isn't expired or spoiled. Also dispose of utensils or small appliances you no longer use, have too many of, or never figured out how to properly operate, like that spiralizer. And as you declutter, clean. This is a great way to wipe down shelves and drawers that we rarely have the chance to clear, says Friedman. Number 3, reset your items. Now get ready to restock with a purpose, tailoring your kitchen to your needs. The placement of items should fit your family's habits, but as a general rule, place frequently used products at eye level and at easy arm's length in your cabinets or pantry, and seldom use ones on less convenient shelves. So store things like canned goods, nuts, pasta, grains, cereals, jars, oils, and spices together to make them easier to find, says Vanessa Rizzetto, a registered dietitian in New York City. You'll be more likely to cook something healthy at home rather than shut the pantry door and order takeout. Empty bins also allow you to arrange items by meal categories. Toss everything for tacos or chili in a bin and resolve to make one super fun and healthy meal a week from scratch, suggests Rizzetto. It's a great way to develop healthy eating habits and sets you up for success one meal at a time. And finally, number 4, pick the perfect plate. Stack salad plates front and center for easy use at mealtime. You'll likely consume 1/3 less food off a 9-inch plate than a 12-inch one, says Petri. Shrink your glasses to replace large glasses with skinny, tall ones to decrease consumption of calorie-laden beverages by up to half. And if you're craving something a little naughty, mix it with lots of ice and sip slowly to cut down on calories while still satisfying your taste buds. So that is some good I think feedback when it comes to your kitchen, especially since we're starting the 2019 year, something that we can all do in January. So a word for the love of dance. As a prima ballerina, Misty Copeland Starr continues to rise, so does her passion for inspiring the talented youth who will follow her. When Misty Copeland isn't performing for sold-out audiences, the principal dancer for the American Ballet Theater, who reprises her lead on stage as Clara the Princess in the Nutcracker this month, or rather last month, can often be found giving back to communities through social campaigns, speaking engagements, and working with disadvantaged young people. Recently, the 36-year-old, who is also an author and activist, connected with local dance troupes in Jamaica and took center stage at Kingston's Little Theater. There she shared with Essence why she does what she does and who she does it for. You just visited Rwanda and are now here in Kingston speaking to young dancers. Why is it important for you to spend time with dancers? Misty's response is, the ballet world is a part of our culture, but I feel like a lot of communities, black communities, don't feel that because they don't see themselves represented. It's important for me to be real to them and be seen by communities all over the world. This winter, you'll be on the big screen in the Nutcracker and the Four Realms. What was it like working on that project? It was exciting. I never imagined I would ever be in a film, let alone a Disney one. For this generation to be able to have this Disney movie where the ballerina princess is brown, that's powerful. You often make a point of identifying as a black ballerina. Why is this something you feel the need to underscore? I've never shied away from the impact of being a black woman in my career. I'm often criticized for it now that I am a principal dancer. They say, okay, why do we need to keep talking about the fact that you're black? But it's because I wouldn't have had the same path or my particular journey if I wasn't. It's always been important to me that younger people can look at me and see themselves through me. It's shaped who I am. What have been some of the highs and lows on your road to principal dancer? It hasn't been easy, but when you have a goal in mind, you just put your head down and work, work, work. I did that for 15 years straight. I didn't realize the change in responsibility that would come with reaching the goal or the expectation, and that then I got there and thought, oh my gosh, the pressure, it's different. If you don't have the passion, the drive, and the love, you won't last in this field. Every time I go on stage, there may be one person in the audience who's never seen me before and will never see me again. I have to give my all every single time as if it's the first time. And the final question from Essence to Misty is, beyond ballet, who would you say Misty Copeland is? And her response is, I'd say she's strong. She's open and honest, an artist, a black woman, and a wife. And that was beautifully said from the word. So continuing on with Essence, the next article that we are going to discuss is why I'm changing the conversation around sex education for women. Brittany Brathway, co-founder of the sex ed startup Kimberative, explains what it means to be a reproductive justice activist. I've never had formal sex education. The first time I was ever tested for HIV was when I wandered into a mobile testing unit parked on the corner of my block in Brooklyn. I wanted the free Metro card that they were giving away in exchange for me learning my status. At 18, I had no idea what the process entailed, and I didn't know whether I was at risk, even though I was already having sex. I never forgot that moment. It was a wake-up call to me that something was missing, and I wanted to be involved in filling the gap. In college, I began doing sex education work focused on HIV, AIDS, for students of color on Syracuse University's campus. I was so moved by the cause that I applied for a program called the Young Women of Color, also known as YWOC, Leadership Council through the Nonprofit Advocates for Youth. The YWOC is where I learned a lot about HIV and AIDS, especially its impact on Black women and other women of color. It's also where I discovered what it meant to be a reproductive justice activist. I had heard about reproductive justice, but until that point, I thought it was focused strictly on abortion. I found out that it was about more than just abortion or choice. How can you have reproductive choice if you don't have access to birth control? Yes, you may be able to choose something, but if you don't have access to it, you don't really have a choice. I identified strongly with the broader idea of what it meant to be an activist in this space. So I co-founded Kimberative, a company that provides sex ed workshops and consulting in 2015 with Kimberly Huggins, one of my best friends. We envision a world where everyone, especially Black and brown women and girls, has unfettered access to power, to resources, to the support they need to make informed and unapologetic decisions about their bodies and identities. I didn't have that as a child. My parents died before I was 5. So as I grew up being raised by relatives, and a lot of decisions were made on my behalf by other people. As a survivor of gender-based violence, I know how important it is to be able to make my own decisions about my identity and my body. Through Kimberative, we begin the sex ed conversation with Black and brown women and girls and non-binary folks, those who do not exclusively identify as male or female. I know some people will say, oh, they're just talking, but there's so much freedom in doing so. Take hashtag MeToo, for example. People sharing their stories and having them to be received and believed opens up so many possibilities for them to take back something they may have felt had been taken from them. We see the same thing when it comes to sex. When people are finally able to name what they actually desire or name what hurts or name what is missing, there's an opening. An opening to ask your partner different questions, ask your doctor different questions, teach your children different things. It all starts with sharing one's experiences. I believe it's important for those of us in sex education to insert ourselves more deeply into the hashtag MeToo conversation. I've seen that there's a divergence between teaching about sex and teaching about sexual violence. It's either we're going to teach kids about the birds and the bees, or we're trying to prevent this bad thing from happening. But part of sexual health is having consensual and pleasurable sex, which means not having unpleasurable or non-consensual relationships. We have to bridge those conversations and give people the tools to talk about them. Even now, when I may share with a family member something that happened to me, they'll say, well, you didn't tell anyone. And I responded, tell anyone? I didn't have the vocabulary to tell you what was happening. This is what inspires me to keep fighting. We need to teach what good touch is, what bad touch is. We need to know what gives us pleasure and what hurts us emotionally and physically. I didn't have this information growing up, and my hope is that it can be a reality for every child. On to our next article, a word. Gabrielle Union, healing at all costs. As she filtered her pain to spare others' feelings about her survival as a victim of sexual violence, this actress, activist, and author delayed her own recovery. When I was raped at 19, I had a boyfriend. After the assault, it was never just about me dealing with surviving rape. It was about surviving rape and dealing with my man and his feeling of emasculation. There was also my dad, who was like, you broke my thing. This is all in the first week, with my eyes still swollen shut and my face messed up from the beating. immediately my pain is decentered because there were bigger fish to fry in my mind. It was like, here's your crash course in living with PTSD. Anything could be a trigger, anything. A door closes. I always felt like someone was sneaking up on me when they're really just walking into a room and I just didn't hear them. I'm constantly having to decenter my pain and what that looks like entirely to make other people comfortable with living, functioning, loving a rape survivor. To do that, I have literally seen every therapist, counselor, spiritual healer, psychiatrist, shaman, and life coach I could. But in the past few years, I've given myself permission to center my own healing. I'm amplifying my pain, which I had never done. When I started emptying out my basket of stuff, I had to get used to saying, I cannot think about how you think of me or how my rape has impacted you. I'm no longer centering that because it is actually causes a pivot in my healing. I would spend half of my therapy session talking about other people, not me, and that's not really helpful. I gravitate towards spaces where there is implied silence. That's why I love libraries and bookstores, because my silence isn't weird there, and I'm okay. One day in a bookstore, I discovered Darnella Ford's Rising. I was struck by the woman on the cover. She has dreads, she's sitting cross-legged, hugging herself, and she's presumably naked. Years later, when I was experiencing one of those times when I felt like I was just circling the drain, my girlfriend said, I think this woman, Darnella, can really help you. I go to her place for counseling, and there's a point in our session where we do a guided meditation, and I see the book. Even though I had been in her house for 2 hours, it's only then I realized that she's the author of Rising. She tells me that she has switched careers and now runs this wellness program called Journey to Worthy. Whether I see Darnella 2 or 3 times a week, there have been those weeks or once every few months, she's always gets me back on my worthiness journey. We talk about the Me Too movement. We talk about hashtag why I didn't report. We talk about how I decentered my pain, trauma, and healing because I never felt worthy of wholeness. Because no one tells Black women we are worthy of wholeness. We tell Black women you're a real one if you shoulder the pain. If there's anything I could say to my fellow survivor, it's center your own pain. It's okay to use the whole hour to talk about it. It's okay to phone a friend and delve into your pain and really focus on your wholeness and your worthiness and your soul. Center your soul. When I started centering my wholeness and centering my soul, my peace, my health, the world opened up. And on that note, we're going to stop there because we've run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time.